The Grand Experiment. Setting: the inauguration of Thomas Jefferson as President of the United States in March 1801. Three persons, Thomas Jefferson with hand raised and one hand on the Bible, standing and facing John Marshall, who holds the Bible. Standing behind him and slightly to Jefferson's side is Aaron Burr, recently inaugurated Vice President. Burr has a sly smile on his face, with his piercing eyes glued on Marshall. A brisk, cool wind blows through the reddish hair, along his arms, and through his fingers that lie upon the sacred Bible. The goosebumps that arise along his exposed neck are not from the cool weather or the blowing wind. They are from the grand responsibility he is accepting, the responsibilities of President of the United States. His name is Thomas Jefferson, and he faces a new challenge, larger, more demanding, and more difficult than any he has faced in his life. His accomplishments and talents are many. He experiments with botany, dabbles with inventions, articulates religious ideology, and expresses in written essays the virtues of democratic ideals. But his most notable effort stems from his days in the Continental Congress. As a young man, he was asked by that esteemed body to write a treasonable document that began the formation of an infant nation, born from ideas based on English law and their representative democratic ideals. He reluctantly took up the challenge at the behest of his friend and future antagonist, John Adams, to make clear and concise reasons for declaring independence from Mother Britain. They had agreed then, but now, 25 years later, John Adams had become everything Jefferson has come to despise: aristocracy, elitism, central authority, near monarchy. Adams and Jefferson, two men united with American independence within their hearts, now divided with opposite visions within their souls for this new nation. At this time, Adams has been rejected by his country, and Jefferson is taking the reins of leadership. Adams left the Capitol hours before, disgraced, disgruntled, and irritated, but nevertheless peacefully, under no life-threatening circumstances. Never in human existence has leadership of such a large nation ended by one faction handing power peacefully and willingly to their rivals. Monarchs, dictators, emperors, all have only surrendered power through death. How can this transition be a smooth one? Jefferson places his hand proudly on the Bible as he stares into the eyes of John Marshall, Adams's representative at the inauguration. Marshall and Jefferson are distant cousins, related through the grand Virginia Randolph dynasty of Tuckahoe, although Marshall is from a disinherited daughter and humble roots. Marshall's destiny is intertwined with His Excellency George Washington. As a young soldier in Washington's army, he had proven his worth and bravery at Brandywine, Mammoth, and during the dark days of Valley Forge. With the formation of the country under the Constitution of 1787, Marshall became an intimate part of Washington and Adams's administration. Faithful to the ideals of federalism, he had watched as Washington handed power to Adams. He had cringed inwardly when Adams, with the ever-present hand of Alexander Hamilton working, pressed Congress to pass the Alien and Sedition Acts. But as a loyal Federalist, Marshall was determined to support the administration in power, right or wrong. Adams was replaced, and now it was time to hand over power to the opposition. That is why Adams is not present today. The emotions run too deep. His ill temper led him away from the Capitol, leaving the government and the direction of it to his one-time friend and now political opposite, Thomas Jefferson. The antagonism between not only those two men, but also members of Congress and the states ran very deep. The results of the recent election had left the country divided, fractured by two political parties that were sure to tear the country apart. The morass of dirt, muck, and scandals became personal. Accusations of fraud, dangers of anarchy, and unfaithfulness ran wild. Additionally, the prolonged congressional battle between the ever-ambitious New Yorker, Aaron Burr, and his opponent, Alexander Hamilton, had caused a constitutional crisis not foreseen by the founders. Burr had received the same number of votes to become president as Jefferson, which caused the party to concede that Jefferson was the intended candidate. The Federalists, under leadership of their grand master, Alexander Hamilton, had flexed its muscles on the floor of Congress to disrupt the transfer of governmental authority a long time before Hamilton had suggested that Jefferson, though not closely associated as ideal, would be much better for the country than the scheming Burr. Jefferson thus had been elected, while Burr was sidelined to the abyss of the vice presidency. Burr, who watches Jefferson take the oath of office, will forever carry the anger and ambition which burns within his heart against the Federalists, and in particular against his arch enemy, Alexander Hamilton. This animosity will no doubt lead to a tragic end. Today, though, is a defining moment for the country and the government. Can the party of Adams hand over the reins of government to their opponents? Hand over power to the rabble that condemned the acts of Congress as illegal? Hand over power to the party that encouraged the breakup and dispersal of federal power to the anarchy of the states? John Marshall, Federalist Secretary of State, acting president during much of Adams's absences, and now Chief Justice, is determined that the transfer of governmental power will be a peaceful one. Historical notes and teaching tips. The United States of America stems from ideals that are uncommon in the history of mankind. Throughout time, most people have sought stability through dictatorship or monarchy. It is precisely this stability that the grand experiment demonstrates in American democracy. The election of 1800, with all its flaws, defines the precise moment when power transferred from one ruling group to another peacefully. Taken for granted and often chalked up as mere politics today, during that tumultuous year, peace was not so certain. Britain awaited only the opportune moment when democracy failed and anarchy returned to regain her prized colonies. In France, upheavals of the revolution were much of the ruling class was guillotined, made many wary of democracy. Reigns of terror likely on the horizon of America's future in 1800, might spell failure for our fledgling nation, if not for the men who were its infant leaders, its midwives, its founding fathers. Inspired by these leaders, the grand experiment exposes the brilliancy and jealousy and fortitude that only their generation could dedicate to the ideal of rule by the people. Men like John Adams, who undoubtedly was the driving force for independence. There is Thomas Jefferson, who was the enlightened mystic of political thought. Even the ever-ambitious Aaron Burr plays a major role in the American dream, where all men can excel and dream. The grand experiment's most dynamic character, though, must be John Marshall. Marshall's symbolic steadfastness, self-sacrificing bravery, and sense of duty necessitates yielding power to his rival, demonstrating the American resolve for democracy, no matter how imperfectly practiced.